This is Boston Calling. This is Tube Talk. Folks, that's Ray Anthony. I'm Paul Burish. This is Tube Talk. Welcome aboard. You've made it through another week. It's Friday night. And friends, let me ask you a few questions here. Do you look at the remnants of old painted signs on aging brick buildings with a great deal of fascination? Do you still enjoy the scent of laundry hung out to dry on a clothesline? Do you wish you could saddle up to a lime Ricky at the local Liggett Rexall drugstore soda fountain? Well, if you find these thoughts pleasing, we have got the weekly radio program for you. This is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM, and streaming over the WRCA 1330 AM website. This is your home for vintage entertainment, music, and interesting chat about the world of antique radio. And, you know, we even play a little nifty music, too.
Durham, North Carolina, the home of Chesterfield. Everybody's waiting for tomorrow's Rose Bowl game, and you Blue Devils better be in the mood. to go, so we close tonight.
That's the Glenn Miller Orchestra with In the Mood. And this is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio 1330. If you haven't figured that out already, you know, folks, Kenneth Richmond Designs, Inc. has the grill cloth you need to achieve that factory-finished look on your most prized projects. RichmondDesignsInc.com is your headquarters for classic cloth to bring out that classic look. You can also see some very nifty radios and different projects Kenny has brought back to life on the site. So please, if your project needs cloth to make it complete, choose RichmondDesignsInc.com. And remember, we need to support those who bring us quality materials for our projects. That's RichmondDesignsInc.com. And your radios can look a heck of a lot better than mine, because I don't have any of that nifty cloth. I have to place an order. Anyway, you know, occasionally we try to create here on the the show a sense of what life was like, as well as talk about radio and radios, and we talk about life back in the 30s and 40s and 50s maybe even. So give you an idea here. Next time you're feeling a little run down and overworked, think about this. This is the typical day of a 1940s housewife doing things the old-fashioned way. The 1940s was a great era for fashion and glamour, and during the war, it seemed to herald a new age for women's freedom. But from 1946, women who were starting out as a housewife for the first time discovered that there was a strict gender-biased code which dictated the model wife was supposed to do. Effortlessly fill the roles of glamorous mother, cook, laundress, cleaner, dishwasher, nurse, and finally hostess. Effectively, women were demoted from home manager during the war years to a laborer. This nightmarish Pleasantville, or some may even say Stepford wife scenario, was to remain well into the 1960s. Well, to give you an idea of why you might need to find a few minutes to relax with your favorite radio, 1946-47, here's an average schedule, okay? Now just check this out and to see if you don't get an appreciation for the greatest generation mom here, okay? 6 a.m., rise and shine, nurse the baby. 6:45, fix breakfast for herself and husband John. 7:15, John and Marjorie enjoy some time alone before waking the kids. Oh boy, and we know how fun that is. 7:45, breakfast for everyone. 8 a.m., John to work, wash dishes, clean downstairs, call the grocers. 9 a.m., time to give the baby a bath, make the beds, and clean upstairs. 10:30, nurse the baby. Do you notice a consistent theme there? A hungry baby. 11 a.m., fix lunch. 11:30, lunch for Sean and Rusty, your two active boys. 12 o'clock noon, John, the husband, home for lunch. Better have it ready, honey. 1 o'clock, John, back to work. Naps for the boys, wash the dishes, and a nap for Marjorie. Well, you know, at least there's a little break there. 2:30, nurse the baby. You guessed that one, huh? 2:45, clean the living room. It's endless, folks. Absolutely endless. Cleaning, cleaning, vacuuming, cleaning, washing windows. Dusting. 5 o'clock rolls around. Juice for baby, fix the supper. 5:30, supper for Sean and Rusty. 6 o'clock, John's home. Baths for the boys. Sean and Rusty get a nice bath. 6:30, Sean and Rusty in bed. Well, you know, if you could get a kid to bed at 6:30, I'll tell you, you were some kind of a mother. 7 o'clock, dress for dinner. Yep, you've got to dress for dinner before you even cook the meal. 7:15, cocktail with husband John. 7:30, final dinner preparations. 8 p.m., dinner with husband John. 9 o'clock, wash the dishes. 10:30, yes, folks, you guessed it, nurse the baby. 10:45 p.m., personal bath. Oh, what a luxury time that is. Bedtime at 11, and, you know, just to put it all in perspective, you've got to look at some of these pictures here of the smiling mom with the apron and the gingham dress, and you know, they don't seem like it's drudgery, but I think it's all just a nice little facade there. And you know, so let's take hats off. You know, we salute the greatest generation. We always think of those who serve. Let's salute that generation of moms that raised many of us baby boomers here, us old timers. What a job, and what a job well done. something finally to relax to. Hmm?
Chapter 1, not long ago, I found a girl with angel glow. So begins the story of my wife. Chapter 2, her lips are red, and when she smiles, it turns my head. Glad I wed the greatest little wife. It goes on for pages, telling of her charms. I'll go on for ages, adoring her in my arms. Chapter 3, she's heavenly, and strange enough, she goes for me. Now you know the story of my wife. I was just a rounder, always on the town. Lucky that I found her, it's great being settled down. Well, my friend, the end is near. I hope I didn't bend your ear. Now you know the story of my wife.
That's Mr. Smooth, Mr. Nat King Cole. Need I say anything more? Our guest this evening on Tube Talk is a perennial favorite, Mr. Ross Hochstrasser from the New England Antique Radio Club. All around swell radio enthusiast and guy. Ross, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be here on Tube Talk.
Well, you know, and a couple little things here. We're going to kind of take the pulse of the hobby a little bit here tonight with Ross and talk about a project he has almost at 99.9% complete on his bench. But, you know, one of the things that people sometimes will ask me is, and if you look around at certain websites, especially on the web, you know, you look around, you're thinking about getting into antique radio, and you'll see some sets and, you know, they're nicely finished, and gee, they look fancy. You know, they just look super deluxe. They look like something you might see in a magazine or a coffee table book, but they carry a big price tag. And so some people say, gee, this sounds like an awful expensive hobby to get into, and, you know, I'm afraid to spend that much money because what if it doesn't work out like I hope? So, you know, I guess what we're trying to talk a little bit about tonight is any buyer beware type tips that we could share with the audience, especially those who might be first timers, about when they see something and it looks awful, awful fancy, but it's got an awful big price tag. How do you avoid, Ross, getting you know, taken advantage of, I guess, for lack of a better term, or buying something that doesn't quite live up to your expectations, you know, just spending a little too much more than you have to for something that leaves a bad taste in your mouth? Anything come to mind as far as things people can do to try to avoid that little pratfall?
Well, I think the most obvious solution to this whole thing is to not buy radios online, for starters.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew that before I even asked.
Unless you have an established relationship with the seller, you've done business with them in the past, and you have an understanding with them that if it doesn't meet your expectations, you can return it, or maybe get a partial refund or something. I wouldn't make a habit of that with any given seller, because then you can develop a bad taste in their mouth and they won't sell you anything.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, that was the answer just like I would expect a good antique radio club guy to answer it. And, you know, I can see Bruce Phillips in the background with a big smile because, obviously, radio clubs run swap meets. What do we do at swap meets? We buy and sell radios. But Bruce is a big proponent, and you know, every time I have him on to promo a show we have coming up, you know, if you go to a swap meet or you go to an event that your local radio club might have, to Ross's point, you can see it, you can touch it, you can listen to it, you can talk to the guy who may have restored it, and you could probably walk up and down two or three aisles and ask some people, you see that guy down there with that big fancy Grundig? You know, he says he spent, you know, 3 months restoring it, and it's really nifty, but he wants a lot of money for it. Is he okay? And you could probably get some opinions to kind of give you a little, you know, feeling, hopefully, of confidence that it is okay, and yes, in fact, he does do nice work on it, and it warrants the money. So that is really one way to avoid the whole thing, because what, you know, invariably people seem to be attracted to, and again, if you're new in the hobby, you may not be familiar with even some of the terms of the electronics. You know, what's an electrolytic? What's a tuning condenser? You know, what do these things mean? And so you're a little bit leery of all these buzzwords that get thrown around. And so you're attracted by, you know, a well-finished cabinet. Or if they take a picture and they show you the chassis and it looks shiny, but you don't really see underneath it, well, you know, the cabinet's clean, the chassis shiny. Anything else that you could that you think you could see online, Ross, that might give you a tip off if something looks better than it's going to sound?
Well, there's not really any cut and dried rules about it, especially as again online. You know, if you like you say, if you're at a radio show, such as the one coming up in September up in Brookline, New Hampshire.
That's correct.
You can pick the radio up, and you can shake it and rattle it and sniff it and give it a really good eyeball inspection, which you can't do online. And again, the only recourse that you have in purchasing radios online is either, again, establishing a relationship with the seller. You know, maybe start out by not spending $2,000 on a radio, but by spending $5 or $10 on a radio.
There you go.
And, you know, kind of keep an eye open for the same seller over and over again. You can also, if you're on the auction site, which shall go nameless, everybody knows where we are, you can look at feedback and you can read reviews by other people and see what the opinion is about particular sellers. You know, the radios are not what you have to be as concerned about. You have to be more concerned about the sellers than you do the radios.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, most of the radios are repairable. Unless they have some peculiar, odd, cast pot metal part that is not being reproduced anywhere or that is unobtainium, the radios are not generally the problem. The sellers are. So that's really one good way to avoid any heartache is to again, establish a relationship with people like, we won't mention any names, but there are very reputable dealers out there who buy and sell radios and restore radios, and trying to make sure that you're getting what you want. And of course, that's a big problem in this hobby. If you're just walking in the door and saying, gee, I think I'd like to have an old radio, there is just so much out there, ranging from little one-tube regenerative sets from the 1920s all the way up through the big fancy R390 Collins radios and things like that. There's a whole gamut of possibilities to collect. That's why when somebody says to me, gee, I'm thinking about acquiring an antique radio, it's kind of like saying, I want to go buy food. You know?
Yeah, I understand. You know? No, and it's a very good point, and I think that is, you know, when you said in the $5 to $10 range, you know, I mean that's a good price range. You know, we like those price ranges, but I think what you're saying here, correct me if I'm misinterpreting you, is somebody should really have an idea about what are they trying to achieve. I know, are they trying to find the radio that they listen to the Yankees games with Uncle Al on? Because if that's the case, you know, you want to look and find that specific model and maybe get a good example of it. But if you're pressed for space, I mean, are you looking for small, simple radios, easy to work on and get started on? maybe you should be looking at a little Bakelite All-American fives and sixes. They'll, you know, it's a nice entry level. It's a good place to get in, to get a start. They don't take up a lot of room. They're not going to represent a big capital investment. And it might be, even be the type of thing that as you come along and you get a little bit familiar with the ins and outs of things, you want to do some work on them yourself. They're not that intimidating. So I think if a person has an idea what they're trying to achieve, and if you're brand new and you don't know much, you know, yes, there is a very good chance you can fall for, you know, something that looks lovely and has a nice, you know, paragraph or two description about how rare the set might be or how much work was done to it and why it sounds so great. But before you part with your hard-earned cash, I mean, do you want to have, you know, a collection of that type of radio, these big, large wooden 30s and 40s sets that, you know, could add up to a lot of money if you're not working on them yourself and you're buying them online? Or are you just somebody who's interested in the history of the radio, starting to learn a little bit about what makes something go? Then the basic superhets might look nice to you. And again, to your point, you can pick them up more reasonably. And if something doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world. But if you did want to come in at a little higher level and get something that's a little fancier, what are some things you could look for? You could look for a higher tube count, or maybe a three-gang tuning condenser, a little bit more advanced tuning section in there. You know, something that's generally a little older. Not to say all older radios are rarer or more valuable, but they can be, you know, getting harder to find. Anything else that would be a tip-off to something as to whether it might warrant a higher price for us?
Well, generally speaking, radios that have been fully restored command a higher price than barn finds. And some people, that's what they live for. They live for the barn find. They want to buy the $5, $10, $15 radio and bring it home and clean all the mouse droppings out of it and restore it themselves. And that's great. And those are the people that that we really need to start to encourage in this hobby, because the older guys are becoming less and less capable and or interested in doing the repair and restoration work. But one resource that I think we should mention, because it's a very valuable resource, is the website called the Antique Radio Forums, or it's called just antiqueradios.com, and it has an S on the end of radios. It's plural. Antiqueradios.com. There is a fantastic collection of people on this website who are very, very helpful. You can go and put a post on and say, hey, guys, I'm thinking of buying this radio off of the auction place or Craigslist or wherever. Can you look at it? You put a link up on the post, and these guys will go look at it and say either go buy it right now or stay away from it. And it's a very valuable resource. They'll also give you pointers on what you might need to know about whether the knobs are correct on it, whether the case has been modified or the chassis has been modified. There's any number of different aspects of purchasing a radio that can be enhanced by this group of people on the Antique Radio Forums. I lurk there myself, and I think you do as well. It's a tremendous place to avoid getting burned to make the right decision as far as that goes.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that you get there as well, you know, some of these guys, you know, they're from my experience, they're more than willing to share their opinions. You know, if they are familiar with or had a bad time with a particular seller, and you know, they know, they're going to tell you, you know, this might be something you want to think twice about. You know, I've heard, you know, some less than positive things, and you know, it does give you some, you know, a little bit of leverage as far as making a decision. And the nice thing is it's almost like a virtual radio club. You're online, and, you know, if you can't get out, or, you know, radio meets only happen every so often. So if you're not in an area that has an active club or where you can go out and talk with the guys and gals in person, at least you have, you know, a virtual clubhouse. You can go bounce some things off the wall and see what people think. So I think to kind of summarize where we're going with all of this is, it's to have an aim. What are you trying to achieve? What do you want? Do you want simpler radios to learn about rebuilding and, you know, simply to play? If you just want to play AM, FM, Bakelite radios, and you just are intrigued by that whole vacuum tube technology scene, and a good place to start then is with smaller, less expensive sets. if you're looking to get that set that meant something to you, that I think is where you might want to get into a little, you might get into a little trouble, because if you see it and it looks great, there's that urge to go get it, because you never know when you'll see the next one. And, you know, certainly whatever you can get in the way of feedback, either on an antique radio forum or in person at a swap meet, or, you know, occasionally you might even be in a situation where, you know, if you think the trustworthy feedback is there on the bay, you can take that, you know, hopefully and not get burned as well. But it's tough to tell. I mean, and people will show you, like to your point, are the knobs original? That could affect the value. Is the finish restored? Some people will say, well, even if it's been refinished professionally with, you know, perfect toner and lacquers, it's not an original finish. So you can scratch, you know, I wouldn't give them that for it at all. So there's all these variables. And even if people post under chassis views, yes, you can see what kind of work they did. I guess you could see if there's still rust under there. Is there rotting wire under there? Maybe you could ask if you wanted to, and the seller would accommodate you, ask to see some shots from under the chassis if he claims it's been restored. What do you think that might show you off?
Well, that certainly will show you whether there's any new resistors and or capacitors. It'll show you if there's any mice nests underneath there. and if there's been any fires. I actually have a Raycal IRA-17 that I was restoring that had two separate fires in two different places underneath the chassis. And we restored it and got it going, though. It's a nice radio. But you mentioned something about value, and one of the things that I wanted to mention is that we are in a buyer's market right now. Antique radio collections are floating to the surface at an alarming rate. In fact, after our September 27th meet, we're going to have an auction, and I'm sure some really good bargains can be had there, if the last auction was any indication. And the reason for the buyer's market situation is because, unfortunately, we don't see a lot of teenagers and 20-year-olds at our swap meet. There would probably have been a time when there would have been 14-year-old kids bumping each other out of the way to get to a particular radio, and unfortunately we don't see that anymore. And without the influx of new blood into the hobby, and it's not just radios, it goes across the board, people who buy and sell and collect watches and clocks, model railroading, and virtually any other kind of a hobby as we knew them, you can find the same situation where there's no young people becoming interested in it. And at the same time, there's a lot of older folks who are either downsizing or who unfortunately have passed away, whose collections are surfacing. And the fact that the supply and demand thing is going out of balance, it throws the prices way down. You can get some really good bargains on radios if trying to buy them. The sad reality is that if you don't buy them, they'll probably end up in the landfill someplace.
Yeah, and that's very true. And I mean, as long as the children or whoever inherits these things or who gets put in the position of cleaning out, you know, an old-timer's collection is willing to somehow get it to either an auctioneer or put it on eBay or put it on the radio attic or put it somewhere to sell it, you know, it's going to go in the dumpster. And if the demand is failing and the supply of these sets that in many cases may have been restored or at the very least well cared for, you know, as far as kept somewhere that's dry, they don't let the you know, the critters run around inside, you know, they're kept in a nice warm dry environment, better than, you know, finding it in a basement or a barn or, you know, in an old garage. You might find yourself in a situation where if you apply yourself a little bit, you could find that radio of your dreams and spend a lot less than what you see some sellers asking for, you know, who might be looking to take just a wee bit of advantage of somebody who's new to the hobby or who's not too familiar with antique radio. So I think we've covered that one pretty satisfactorily. We're going to take a brief pause here and just remind everybody, this is Tube Talk. We are on WRCA 1330 AM. Our guest this evening is Ross Hochstrasser of the New England Antique Radio Club. And Ross wanted to give us just a little bit of an update. He's got an Australian morale-type radio that he's just about done with. And you did feature this, I think, Ross, in one of our newsletters. And the thing that struck me when we were chatting before we had you on here is you said your son actually recreated the dial for you. Was it a silk screening job? Or I mean, just the fact that your son was willing to do that for you is pretty impressive. What is this beast that you've been working on?
Well, you're absolutely right. I did write an article, and it was billed as part one of a multi-part series last fall. So there will be
a sequel.
Second half, a sequel, as it were, coming out soon, I hope. I need to get some issues worked out with my camera and the computer. But what it is, it's a radio that was made in 1945. It was made in Australia by Amalgamated Wireless of Australia. And it's what they call an amenities receiver. We call them morale receivers, like the SBR-100 series that were used during World War II for entertaining the troops. This is not a radio you would find in the communication shack. This was in the mess hall or other entertainment area for the
in the barracks, maybe, in the tent somewhere, yep.
Exactly. And the majority... This radio was made under a couple of different guises. One of them, the one that I have, was made for the U.S. Army Air Force. And it says right on the front, U.S. AAF Amenities Receiver.
Very cool.
And mine runs on 110 volts AC. Most of the radios were made for the Australian Army, and they say Australian Army Amenities Service on them. And they do not run on 110 volts AC. They run on 6 volts DC.
Battery set.
It was a vibrated type scheme for B+ and 6 volt filament tubes. And you would open the hood of your Jeep and take the big alligator clips and clip them onto the battery terminals and throw a piece of wire up in a tree or something, and you would be able to listen to Tokyo Rose or the local weather report or whatever you wanted to. It is an AM shortwave radio. It covers up to, I can't really see it. It covers up to about 18 megahertz, I guess. Yep, 18 megahertz on shortwave, plus the AM broadcast band. And it's a neat little radio, and I acquired it off of eBay probably close to 10 years ago for the whopping sum of $9.95.
Now, this is a bargain for you. There's a man who didn't pay too much.
No. Well, it cost me $50 for shipping.
Oh, yeah, the heavy.
It suffered some damage in shipping as well. It's a steel case with a steel chassis, and it has a cover that closes over the front of the speaker to keep moisture out of the speaker. It was dropped in shipping. The speaker basket flexed and damaged the cone. And I had to recone the speaker, the first time I've ever done a recone job, and it came out very, very well, not to pat myself on the back.
I'll we'll give you a pass.
Yeah, it also, and I knew this before I even bid on it, had a burned-out power transformer, which I was able to fit up a replacement transformer that I'm still not happy with. It works great, and it's the perfect transformer, but it's mounted kind of cockeyed in there, and it doesn't look good. So I need to readdress that issue with it, but it's a very interesting radio, and I was a little bit surprised that I won it for the price that I won it for, because I looked at it and said, gee, U.S. Army Air Force, they went out of business and became the Air Force in 1947, which is 2 years after this radio was made, and how many of them would AWA have produced for the U.S. Army Air Force? I'm guessing probably not a lot.
Yeah, no.
They may have made 100 of them or so. So, at any rate, somebody had stuck masking tape all over the dial. The dial is a piece of aluminum that was painted gray, and then the all the nomenclature was silkscreened on it. And all of the writing on the front of the radio is on this one plate. So, removing the plate and then stripping all the old paint off and then repainting it was the order of the day, and it was not something I would tackle myself. I had reasonably good photographs of radios just like it that had been restored over in Australia, so we had a good sample to go by, plus the remains of what was there from my original. And my son took on the project. He stripped the paint off of it. He created the silk screen in his computer and printed it out on the silk screen, and applied the white paint to the silk screen, and it came out perfect. It is just unbelievable, and I was so thrilled that he took part in this. Not that I didn't pay him, I certainly did. But
well, you've been feeding him for how many years? I mean, come on, he's been...
Yeah, he's 25, and he actually builds vacuum tube guitar amplifiers, and he also builds electric guitar effects pedals. And so he's been perfecting his silk screening skills for all of that activity. He's also building analog synthesizers, and all the panels that he makes for that are all silk screened as well. So it was meant to happen, I think.
Well, God bless him.
Absolutely.
One question before we continue here. Just did you ever get a feel, or I mean, it's sometimes these eBay purchases are kind of blind purchases. You just hope, you know, the guy packs it up halfway decent, and here's your money, and you know, see you later. But did you have any? Did he give you any clue how he got a hold of an Australian receiver? Was this something through his family? Maybe his dad was in the war, or brought it home with him, or was he ever spend some time in Australia? Did you ever hear anything about how he got a hold of it?
No, I never did, and I wish I had asked more questions like that. Again, I threw a bid of $60 on it, fully assuming that I would not get it.
Right.
I assumed that this has got to be a real serious piece of history, and I'm going to get blown out of the water.
Sure.
Nobody else bid.
Hmm.
And I was kind of surprised and shocked by that, and for whatever reason, I didn't want to go digging and irritate this guy, at least until the radio was in my possession.
Sure,
I was kind of distraught when I opened up the box and saw that he really didn't pack it well at all.
Right.
It was literally rattling around in a box that was only a couple inches bigger with some cardboard around it, so it really wasn't packed well. But once I got a look at it and kind of sensed what this piece is, I didn't really care. I was like, you know, there's nothing so grossly wrong with it that I can't restore it.
Right.
So I started the restoration, oh good heavens, probably 5 or 6 years ago. And little at a time, I reconed the speaker, put the power transformer in, recapped it completely, acquired a couple of tubes for it that was missing. And the big hurdle was the dial, which my son did beautifully. And there will be pictures in an upcoming issue of Antique Radio News through the New England Antique Radio Club that will show the pictures of the final project here. There is a plexiglass dial pointer that was broken in shipping. I have cut a new one out of nice, new, clean plexiglass and pinstripe down the middle.
Ooh,
of the dial pointer.
Very nifty. Very sharp.
Pretty neat. And the kicker is that if the radio didn't perform very well, it would make a nice shelf clean. But this radio is a real kicker. I mean, the sensitivity, it's a three-gang tuning cap. It's only got 7 tubes in it. It's very sensitive, and the audio is just killer. It really has a very, very nice sound for a speaker floating around in a metal case, you know?
Yeah.
But as long as you open the door in front of the speaker, if you leave the door closed, it doesn't sound like
that could be a problem. I can understand myself doing that. You know, and the other really neat thing about this story, as often is the case, sometimes, you know, you don't have high expectations for something, and in this case, you didn't even think you were going to get it, and it's turned out to be a real charmer, and I can tell you're very taken with it. So sometimes things you kind of stumble into turn out a heck of a lot better than things you know, you lust after for years, and you get it, and you just say, eh, well, why was I chasing that thing for the last 5 years, you know? And here's a case where you got a nice surprise, and your son pitched in on that dial, and as it turned out, you know, not only has it got a little history behind it, and all of those radios, there was a guy out in the Illinois club, Dan Hsu, and he restored a Temple, which was, I believe, a company out of Connecticut, and he had a Morale radio, and again, it's the same thing. It's knowing that somebody overseas listened to it. It brought a little bit of home to them, and, you know, these things come, you know, usually pretty solidly built, so if it survives the shipping back to you, you know, it's a great piece of history to have, and they're fun to listen to still. So maybe for somebody who's thinking about buying some real fancy-looking, over-lacquered, too shiny, too good to be true set, should go around and look a little bit around the edges of the hobby, and sometimes you find things that come out and surprise you, and you know, it can be a real rewarding experience as well as kind of a treat, and sometimes turn out to be more rare or more interesting than you ever thought they could be. So that's why you need to sign up for this hobby, folks. Tell your friends and neighbors. Hey, Ross, as always, it's been a treat to have you on, and thanks for the insight on not only buyer beware, but on the Morale Radio. And if I can figure it out, we'll get when you get the pictures, we'll try to get them linked or posted somehow on the Tube Talk website, and some of the listeners can check it out and see what a nifty job you guys did. Thanks a million for being on. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure to be on Tube Talk, Paul. You have a wonderful night.
Take care, Ross. Bye-bye.
Seems the love I've known has always been the most destructive kind. Guess that's why now I feel so old before my time. Yesterday, when I was young, the taste of life was sweet as rain upon my tongue. I teased at life as if it were a foolish game, the way the evening breeze may tease a candle flame. The thousand dreams I dreamed, the splendid things I planned, I always built to last on weak and shifting sand. I live by night and shun the naked light of day, and only now I see how the years ran away. Yesterday, so fast that time and youth at last ran out. I never stopped to think what life was all about, and every conversation I can now recall concerns itself with me and nothing else at all. Yesterday, the moon was blue, and every crazy day brought something new to do. I used my magic age as if it were a wand, and never saw the waste and emptiness beyond. The game of love I played, seem somehow to drift away, and only I am left on stage to end the play. There are so many songs in me that won't be sung. I feel the bitter taste of tears upon my tongue. The time has come for me to pay for yesterday when I was young.
That's Mr. Roy Clark, one of my favorite songs. What a nice voice. Nice guitar work, too. Very underappreciated guitarist, one of the most technically astute guitar men you'll ever see or hear, and he doesn't get a lot of credit because he's in that country box. You know, we like to put things in boxes, and guitarists are blues guys or rock and rollers, and Les Paul, Roy Clark, those kind of guys, treasures. Chet Atkins, certified guitar picker. You'll hear them here on Tube Talk. You'll also hear nifty, knowledgeable radio guys like Ross Hochstrasser. Thanks for being on, Ross. Always a treat, always interesting to see what's on the bench, what's getting done, and to get Ross's keen insight into the world of antique radio. We thank him for being our guest this week. We appreciate you always listening and telling your friends. This is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio 1330 AM and streaming on the WRCA 1330 AM website. tubetalk1@gmail.com. We'll get you in touch with us. Do you have a question, comment, reaction, suggestion for song, guest, or topic? Please let me know, folks. I'd love to accommodate you. And I got kind of a funny email the other day from somebody, a guy who said he enjoyed the show, he likes the music, and he said, you know, you should be on the OFN network. And then, of course, he had to answer the question, and what's OFN? Old Fart Network. Well, if that's what it's come down to, we'll have some fun with it every Friday night. Yes, indeed, we will. Yes, and the crowd loves it, because what's there not to love? Instruments well played, a nice thought in a lyric, beautifully sung. That's the fifth dimension. This is Tube Talk. You'll hear it all here on America's Voice for Vintage and Antique Radio. We celebrate our entertainment heritage by honoring those great electronic sets, as well as the music that has made radio so fun to listen to. Almost time to say goodnight. We appreciate you listening. Tune in next week, and I'll tell you how housewife Ann Williams in 1947 fed her family on $12.50 a week Yes, you'll hear it here all on Tube Talk. Good night, gang.
If I didn't care more than words can say, if I didn't care, would I feel this way? If this isn't love, then why do I thrill? And what makes my head go round and round while my heart stands still? If I didn't care, would it be the same? Would my every prayer begin and end with just your name? And would I be sure that this is love beyond compare? Would all this be true if I didn't care for you?
If I didn't care, honey child, more than words can say. If I didn't care, would I feel this way? Darling, if this isn't love, then why do I thrill so much? And what is it that makes my head go round and round while my heart just stands still so much?
If I didn't care, would it be the same? Would my every prayer begin and end with just your name? And would I be sure that this is love beyond compare? Would all this be true if I didn't care?